Chapter 18. Jackman listened to Robbie and Charlie relate their interview with Ezra. When they had finished, he sat in silence looking into space while they glanced at each other. "So, you're saying this mystery man who allegedly holds a grudge against Clay Bullimore and farmers Beaton and Dewsbury is a dead ringer for Ashcroft?"
"According to the last sightings we had of him, sir, although that was a while ago now," said Charlie.
"It crossed our minds that he might have arranged them as a diversion, something to keep us dancing all over the county while he gets on with whatever he's planning to do." Robbie shook his head. "We've got nothing to suggest that Ezra was involved in the gun thefts, but he's a real oddball, sir. He just doesn't seem to add up, does he, Charlie?"
"No, he doesn't,"
Charlie said.
"I'd really like to do some more background checks on Ezra Lorimer, sir. We know he was suspected of handling stolen goods, but I'd like to dig deeper."
"Tomorrow, Charlie. It's getting late. You and Robbie get off home and grab a few hours' sleep. Ezra can wait until the morning." He paused. "Just one thing. Did you show him the photograph of Ashcroft?"
"Charlie didn't come up with the thought until we were almost back here, sir," said Robbie.
"I'll go back first thing and see if he can ID Ashcroft as his man." Jackman was tempted to go out there himself, but he wanted to see Laura. He had already had to postpone their meal out with Sam to the following night. They were both understanding, but it made Jackman sad. He had made this big decision and had wanted to celebrate it with her. As usual, work had got in the way. "Okay, Robbie, but I'd do it really early if I were you, just in case he decides to take himself off."
"You got it, boss. I'll be up with a lark."
About to leave, Robbie paused.
"It makes sense, doesn't it?
Ashcroft playing with a family of innocents like them."
"Perfect sense," said Jackman. "He'd enjoy the game."
After they had gone, Jackman rang Laura. Sam had stayed at her apartment with her until forensics had finished. When they heard that he would be working late, they had grabbed a fish and chip supper.
"Sam didn't want me to be alone after what had happened earlier, bless him," said Laura. "So we went back and spent some time sorting out a few more of the things I wanted to take. Until we get the mill set up, I'm going to be using a clinic room at Greenborough Hospital for appointments with clients. I'm just about to drive over to Cartoft, or should I call it home?"
"Sounds good, doesn't it?" said Jackman softly.
"Very good, darling."
"I'm leaving now too, so I'll see you there."
Jackman entered the call and stood up. Just one more thing to do. He needed to know how Kevin was. He had refused to go to hospital despite all their efforts to persuade him. Kevin answered his phone on the second ring.
"DR Jackman, sir, is everything okay?"
"We're just shutting up shop for the night. I'm worried about you, Kevin."
"I'm shaken, sir, but that's to be expected. Alan will be home soon. He had a late call and got held up, but he's found a colleague to cover for him."
He gave a hollow laugh. "He'll be starting to think I'm doing this on purpose."
"Don't underestimate the shock you've had, Kevin." Jackman knew Kevin would object to what he had to say next.
"I'd like you to take a few days off. You're due to start with us next week, but we can postpone it for a while. Have you somewhere you could go that's away from here? You need some downtime and a bit of distance, Kevin."
Kevin's silence seemed to last forever, until Jackman began to wonder if he was still there. Finally, he said,
"I must keep working, sir. I can't be hiding away. We all know what we sign up for, and we just have to deal with it. What's more, I'm starting to think that the sniper is using me to set up his targets. If we are clever, we might be able to use that to our advantage. Twice I've been within shouting distance of him, so maybe you should be watching me."
Jackman frowned. Kevin's tone was far too matter of fact. He was young, inexperienced, and had just seen two men shot dead right in front of him, as well as discovering the body of a third. Kevin was no hard-assed soldier honed for combat. He was a sensitive and compassionate copper.
"I applaud your dedication, Kevin, but I really think you've suffered enough in the last few days, and I want you to take some time out. Look, I'll ring you tomorrow morning and we'll talk again. I'd rather not have to pull rank on you, so think about what I've said and talk to Alan, all right?"
Sounding unconvinced, Kevin said he would. Despite his words, Jackman suspected he'd see him at work the next day. He only hoped the boy wouldn't suffer for it later. He ended the call, picked up his jacket and left. At around 1 in the morning, Marie's phone rang. She struggled to rouse herself, afraid it would be yet another death. It took her a few moments to realize that it was Esther Lorimer speaking. Esther's words tumbled out.
"You said to ring you. If I thought of anything odd, you told me to ring."
"Esther? Yes, that's right. Now, is something wrong? Are you all right?"
"I don't know why he did these things, Sergeant Evans, but he must have had a good reason. Ezra cares about us. He wouldn't hurt us or get us into trouble, I'm sure, but..."
Her voice trailed off.
"Tell me what's worrying you, Esther. I'll help if I can."
Marie was wide awake now.
"Has Ezra done something else?"
"You need to talk to Paul, Sergeant. I overheard him and Levi talking about something Ezra asked Paul to do. I don't know what it was. They shut up when they saw me, but now Paul is shit scared. I thought I'd have it out with Ezra, but he doesn't want to talk to me. He won't even open his door."
"I bet he won't."
"Listen, Esther, you leave this to me, okay? I'll be there first thing and we'll try to sort it out, I promise. You just try to get some sleep. It's nearly 1:30 in the morning, you know. I'll see you tomorrow. And Esther, don't tell anyone, okay?"
Esther hung up. Marie sat for a while, wondering whether to wake Gary and tell him about the call. They could do nothing tonight. So she decided it would keep until breakfast. She lay back down and closed her eyes. What was Ezra asking Paul to do that was so frightening? Only one thing came to mind. Guns. Stolen ones. She recalled being told that Paul was volatile and prone to outbursts of temper, and she pictured the shattered door. Someone sure took their temper out on that, as well as Kenneth Harcourt's old gun cabinet. It had been reduced to kindling. Had Ezra deceived Paul with some cock and ball story, just like he had Noah and Jacob? Marie lay awake, staring into the darkness. Everything rested on whether Ezra recognized the photo of Ashcroft and whether he'd been responsible for stealing those guns. If that proved to be the case, then a rather frightening theory began to materialize. One by one, the pieces of the jigsaw slotted into place. It was just a hypothesis, but was also just about possible. Wanting to cause mayhem and keep the police busy, Ashcroft picks on Ezra, who makes use of his crazy family to earn himself some money. He also pays Ezra to get one, possibly two, of the brothers to steal him a gun that he then passes on to the man he has hired to assassinate certain designated targets. Marie let out a soft groan. But that man is evolving into a very dangerous killer in his own right, and Ashcroft has a renegade on his hands. He would certainly not have accounted for that in his vengeful plan. If she was right, then she and Jackman could be right in the middle of a deadly situation, caught in the crossfire between two ruthless killers, each one out to better the other. She shuddered. She'd ring Jackman at first light and throw this theory at him, so they could bring Ezra in for questioning as soon as possible. He could be the key to finding Alistair Ashcroft. Aware that she would need her wits about her in the days to come, Maria tried to sleep. But Alistair Ashcroft had taken that from her, too. Another person experiencing a sleepless night was Kenneth Harcourt. Eventually, with a mumbled assurance to his wife, he gave up. 1/2 hour later, he was in his office at the gun club. For the whole of the preceding day, he had been going through membership records and asking the staff about any members or prospective members who might have given them cause for concern. Now, at 3 in the morning, he was leafing through his diary, hunting for any mention of his old friend Arthur Barnes. Harcourt was an inveterate note-maker and keeper of diaries. He kept everything, pieces of paper, memos, and torn-off scraps on which he'd recorded telephone numbers. In his head was a vague memory of something that had happened a couple of months ago that could help the police inquiry. It involved Arthur. He had been a brilliant armourer. Usually efficient and meticulous, his turbulent home life sometimes caused him to behave irrationally. Knowing of his heroic past and his fraught relationship with his wife, Harcourt forgave him the occasional lapse. He found what he was looking for. A brief note made 6 weeks earlier. Arthur had had an altercation with one of the newer members. It was nothing major, but had rattled Arthur to the extent of calling the man an irritating piece of shit. In the note he'd made, Harcourt had registered amusement at Arthur's outburst. Nevertheless, he had scribbled the name down so that he could check this man out at some point. And here it was. Ralph Renwick. He recalled checking the man's credentials and finding nothing amiss, but had he actually talked to him? Harcourt sighed. With his darling daughter still occupying 50% of his thoughts at any given moment, it wasn't surprising he forgot things. He tried to recall this Renwick. Arthur had described him as upper class, and his voice and his clothes did indeed speak of breeding. He had a rather supercilious air, a know-it-all attitude which had got under Arthur's skin. Apparently, Renwick had questioned Arthur's knowledge about a weapon and its handling. The discussion had descended into an altercation. Harcourt couldn't recall seeing Renwick at the club after that. He got up from his desk and went to the register. All members signed in and out every time they visited. Any guns issued out that were club property were recorded by their new temporary armourer, a woman named Jackie Hampshire. Harcourt hoped she would take up the post on a permanent basis, for she was meticulous with the stocks and really knew her stuff, having been part of a British shooting team for several years. He scanned the register, going back 6 weeks, but there was no mention of Renwick. Harcourt returned to his office and looked up the man's contact number, made a note of it and put it in his pocket. As soon as the day began, he would ring D.I. Jackman. What if there was more to this altercation than Arthur had said? And why had Renwick subsequently avoided the gun club? Prior to the argument, he had attended regularly, and as far as Harcourt could recall, was becoming a pretty proficient target shooter. Alarm bells rang in Harcourt's head. A picture formed in his mind of Renwick talking to their receptionist and picking up some leaflets from the display rack on the foyer desk. The one he was most interested in was a club that had recently opened a new range somewhere north of Lincoln. It was a very professional outfit with two clubs in Lincolnshire. They had recently taken on a retired army firearms training officer and now offered sniper experience days. Harcourt hurried to the foyer and picked up the leaflet. Sniper experience days, oh shit. He read the blurb. He'd heard about these, and they were very popular, even though they cost around £300 a day. Participants would travel by 4x4 to a remote part of the North York Moors, where you could get a taste of firing such weapons as AK-47s and take part in mock hostage situations. The events also offered long-distance target shooting in open countryside with a trained instructor, and, if you were good enough, there were even advanced courses. A sentence from the leaflet stuck in his brain. 850-meter long-range target shooting with a steel-core Cyclone 308 military sniper rifle. No previous experience necessary. Harcourt felt dizzy. He looked at his watch. 5 a.m. Should he phone now? He drew in a breath. To hell with it. He found D.I. Jackman's mobile number in his contacts and hit dial. For the third time in 2 hours, Rosie awoke to the sound of fretting babies. She staggered out of bed, vaguely wondering if it were a twin thing, the fact that they started crying at exactly the same time. With a groan, Max pushed the duvet aside. "You stay here, Flower. I've got it." Gratefully, she climbed back into bed and sank into a troubled half-sleep. She was exhausted. This could not go on. Half an hour later, having worked his magic, Max returned carrying 2 mugs of tea. All was quiet. Rosie hauled herself up. "Boy, do I need this." Max smiled sleepily at her. "They are still pretty poorly, but they're improving. Another day and I think they'll have turned the corner." "That's good. Poor little mites. Earache is horrible and they can't tell us, can they?" "Ah, they have their ways. Like yelling their heads off." Max grinned. "True." She turned to Max. "Darling, we need to talk." Max lost his smile. "That sounds ominous." "It's serious, Max."
We've done our best to both be coppers and parents, but the fact is I'm just not coping.
Rosie closed her eyes in relief. At last, she'd come out with it.
What are you saying, Rosie?
Asked Max quietly.
If you agree, I'd like to become a full-time mum, and I want you to go back to work full-time. At the moment, I spend my whole working day worrying about you and the children. You are the best dad in the world, and you have more of a way with the twins than I do, but I can't do both anymore.
For a while, Max said nothing. He took her hand in his.
Are you sure about this?
Totally. No question. I'll go in today and ask Jackman to put the wheels in motion. When my shift finishes tonight, that will be that. My place is here, Max, at home with the twins.
Max let out a whistle.
Well, that came out of left field.
His grip on her hand tightened.
I do understand, though, Rosie, really.
She smiled at him.
Why did she feel like crying? I love you, Mr. Cohen.
I'm pretty smitten myself, Mrs. C.
He leant over and kissed her cheek, not quite scalding her with tea.
Even if you do come out with some stunners sometimes.
I think it's this ear problem that brought it home to me. I was supposed to be tracing candidates for our shooter, and all I could think about was Jessica and Tim. I wasn't doing my job properly, and with things as they are at present, that means I'm letting the team down.
If I go back, I'll worry too, kiddo.
I'm not doubting that, Max. But you're able to compartmentalise. I can't. I know it will mean a drastic drop in income, but my career can go on hold until the kids are older. Then a few years down the line, perhaps we'll think again.
We'll cope. If it's what you really want, Max smiled at her, then I'll not object.
Rosie sipped her tea.
Then that's sorted. And do feel free to pass on any tips on how to calm a screaming twin.
One day, Flower, I'll write a book on it.
We'll make a fortune.
She snuggled against him.
Quick cuddle and then I'll get ready for my last day at work. I have a feeling I'm going to be really on the ball for once.
Her team will miss you, Rosie.
I'm not going away forever, and they will know I'm doing it in everyone's best interests. If I'm not functioning properly, it could be dangerous and I couldn't live with the consequences.
Harcourt had just called, ridding Jackman of all hope of getting any more sleep. Was this Renwick, the shooter? It certainly looked that way. He too had heard about these sniper experience days. In fact, a couple of their own firearms officers had gone on one and had raved about it for weeks. He got out of bed, careful not to disturb Laura, and went downstairs. He rang the CID office and got the detective on night shift.
Bob, do me a favour and run a name for the PNC for me, would you?
Ralph Renwick. He's local by all accounts, but I don't have an address for him yet. A sleepy voice repeated the name and said he'd get back as soon as. Jackman rubbed his hands. This could be their first real lead to the sniper. If they could identify this guy, and also get something from the enigmatic Ezra Lorimer, they might just make some headway with tracking Ashcroft. He didn't have to wait long.
Nothing on a Ralph Renwick, sir. I've checked the local phone book as well. There are no Renwicks listed. It's too early to contact DVLC or the DHSS, so I'm afraid I've drawn a blank.
Thanks for trying. Jackman hung up. As he had expected, it convinced him all the more that Kenneth Harcourt had unknowingly been training up their shooter for bigger things. Although it was still very early, Jackman decided to shower and get ready for work. As he made his way back up the stairs, his mobile rang.
You're up early, Marie.
Sorry, boss, but I need to tell you something that happened in the early hours of this morning.
I've got some news for you, too. It's evidently been an eventful night. You first, Marie.
Esther Lorimer rang me, sir. She overheard part of a conversation between her brothers Paul and Levi. She said it sounded as if Ezra had asked Paul to do something for him, and it had scared him badly. The only thing I could think of was the gun thefts.
Jackman considered that.
It's perfectly possible, isn't it? We need to get out there with Robbie.
He said he'd be heading off in time to arrive by 7 a.m. We need to go with him. You haven't rung him and told him about this yet?
No, sir. I wanted you to know first.
Ring him now, and we'll tie up at the station, okay?
We'll be there. Gary's already in the shower, but, sir, what about your news?
Ah, yes, well, Kenneth Harcourt recalled a bit of a dust-up between Arthur Barnes and one of the club members, a man named Ralph Renwick. This guy was apparently very interested in one of these specialised once-in-a-lifetime experience days.
Like wing-walking or driving an F1 racing car?
Like picking up an AK-47 and being a sniper for a day.
Holy shit. Oh, sorry, boss.
No apology necessary, Marie. I wholly concur. The problem is, he's not known to us and we have no address for him. So we need to start a serious search. 10-1, he's our shooter. I'll get Rosie and Charlie on that as soon as they get in. Meanwhile, we hit the Lorimers.
See you at the factory.
Marie ended the call. Laura was sitting up in bed.
What's the time?
Too early for you to be up yet, but I have to go, I'm afraid. We need to beard a lion in his den, preferably while he's still half asleep. Jackman pulled clean clothes from his wardrobe. But tonight, we all go out. One way or another, I want us to have our celebratory meal.
Don't make promises you can't keep. And don't forget, lions have sharp claws.
Laura held her arms out to him.
One kiss before you slip into action mode, Detective Inspector.
Now there's an offer I can't refuse. He leant down and kissed her, lightly at first. After a moment he pulled away, breathless. Laura Archer, you are a very difficult woman to leave.
Then you'd better not leave me, had you?
Never, except for work. Now, I'm off for a cold shower.
Shall I join you?
Well, then I'll never get away. I'll lock the bathroom door.
Spoil sport.
Jackman's smile stayed with him until he was ready to leave. Then the whole horrible situation flooded back. I'm off now, he called up the stairs. Come down and lock the doors, Laura, and ring me later, promise? He waited until he heard her footsteps. I love you, he called to the closed door.
Ditto.
He heard a key turn in the lock. Jackman gazed out across the endless fields. Are you out there, Alistair Ashcroft?